This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, sitting in for Terry Gross. Little Children is a satirical novel about a young woman who is married, raising her child in an upper-middle-class suburb, and can't understand how she wound up in the life she's living. But she believes she has found some meaning in her life when she meets Todd, a father at the playground who seems to be as alienated as she is. They begin an affair and think they are falling in love. The New York Times Book Review described Little Children as an extraordinary novel about adultery and child raising in a generic American suburb. The author of Little Children is Tom Perotta, who also wrote Election, a satirical novel about a high school election. That book was adapted into a film starring Matthew Broderick and Reese Witherspoon. Perotta's novel The Wishbones was about a musician who wants to be a rock star, but after many years, remains stuck playing weddings. Terry spoke with Tom Perotta last spring when Little Children was published. It's just come out in paperback. Here's a reading from the beginning of the novel.
The young mothers were telling each other how tired they were. This was one of their favorite topics, along with the eating, sleeping, and defecating habits of their offspring, the merits of certain local nursery schools, and the difficulty of sticking to an exercise routine. Smiling politely to mask a familiar feeling of desperation, Sarah reminded herself to think like an anthropologist. I'm a researcher studying the behavior of boring suburban women. I am not a boring suburban woman myself. Jerry and I started watching that Jim Carrey movie the other night. This was Cheryl, mother of Christian, a husky 3.5-year-old who swaggered around the playground like a mafia chieftain, shooting the younger children with any object that could plausibly stand in as a gun. A straw, a half-eaten banana, even a Barbie doll that had been abandoned in the sandbox. Sarah despised the boy and found it hard to look his mother in the eye. "The pet guy?" inquired Marianne, mother of Troy and Isabel. "I don't get it. Since when did passing gas become so hilarious?" Only since there was human life on Earth, Sarah thought, wishing she had the guts to say it out loud. Marianne was one of those depressing supermoms, a tiny, elaborately made-up woman who dressed in spandex workout clothes, drove an SUV the size of a UPS van, and listened to conservative talk radio all day. No matter how many hints Sarah dropped to the contrary, Marianne refused to believe that any of the other mothers thought any less of Rush Limbaugh or any more of Hillary Clinton than she did. Every day, Sarah came to the playground determined to set her straight. And every day she chickened out.
That's Tom Perotta reading from his new novel, Little Children. Tom, the main characters in this novel are kind of living the wrong life. Like Sarah, the main character who you were just reading about. This is not the life she wanted. She didn't plan on being a mother living in the suburbs. In college, she had been bisexual. She had an affair with a woman. She was immersed in critical gender studies. She worked at a rape crisis hotline. She was hoping to be a feminist film critic. I think a lot of people feel that they ended up in the wrong life. How did she get there?
Well, I think she got there the way a lot of people get where they end up. The years after college were particularly lonely for her. She was directionless. She tried graduate school, was very excited for a while, but then didn't like teaching very much, worked at Starbucks, had some affairs. And somehow there was a man at Starbucks, an older guy who was also a little bit lost, who found his way toward her. And, you know, they fell in love, so she thought, got married, and suddenly found herself in the exact, I mean, she didn't have a profession. He did. Basically, you know, there's a kind of economic determinism to it that's almost 19th century to her. I also think there's something about the generation, that's my generation, the people who went to college in the 80s and 90s, when feminism was still, I think, a really dynamic force in American culture. And you know, we, in our minds, imagined a whole different set of social arrangements and family arrangements, and something happened, you know. I mean, when I was first a parent and at the playground, I was suddenly surprised to find myself often the only stay-at-home dad. You know, I wasn't a full-time stay-at-home dad, but I was doing about half-time childcare, and if I took my kids to the playground during the workday, I was usually the only man there. And I think that in the same way that I probably felt surprised by that and a little bit, like what had happened? Where was the world that we thought we were entering? I think someone like Sarah, who was, really in the vanguard of this sort of thinking, probably felt it quite a bit more acutely than I did.
Well, I want to get back in a minute to you being the only dad in the playground, but first I want to talk about another father, a father in your novel, who is the father in the playground. He's one of the few guys who goes there with his kids, with his kid, and he ends up having an affair with Sarah. But he, too, feels like he's not quite in the right life. His thing when he was in college was football, and now he's studying for the bar exam kind of unenthusiastically. How did he get stuck in the wrong life?
Well, he's not sure about that. His mother died when he was in high school, and he'd become a sort of high achiever in the wake of that. And life had been completely effortless for him through. He's a very good-looking guy, very smart guy. He married this beautiful woman. He got accepted into law school. And at some point, between finishing law school and passing the bar, you know, they had a kid. His wife was working full-time. He was home with the kid. And what seemed to happen to Todd was that he just lost interest in the adult trajectory that he'd been on. I mean, in some ways, he's a male version of one of those women CEOs who suddenly decides that she doesn't want to, you know, run the company. She wants to be home with her kids. In some sense, parenthood does appeal to him. I mean, in a way, his wrong life is the exact opposite wrong life of Sarah's. I mean, he's a man who's supposed to have a high-powered career who somehow has decided he likes the rhythms of being home with a kid all day and likes the rhythms of adolescence, likes the rhythms of sports. He likes everything but the rhythms of responsible adulthood.
Do you feel like you're living the right life?
I feel like I am now. I think that I was one of those people who was very shaken by parenthood. Not so much because I didn't like it, because I really did enjoy it, and I found it kind of thrilling and mesmerizing the way a lot of people of my generation, do. At the same time, I wasn't where I wanted to be professionally, and, you know, I was shocked by the time burdens that were placed on me. And, you know, I had gone to great lengths to, you know, invent myself as somebody who, you know, at a certain level of coolness, or so I thought, you know, and I think parenthood is about the least cool role you can take on. And so for anybody who has any sort of, I think, you know, bohemian leanings or aspirations or self-delusions, you know, you can put it in all those ways, parenthood is a jolt to, you know, the very fiber of your being.
I'm sure that's true. And why is that? What is it that is so, like, uncool about parenthood, unhip about parenthood?
Well, for one thing, right, coolness must have something to do with a kind of, I mean, there's a certain sexual component to it. And mm-hmm. As a parent, you know, your sexuality is, I think, you know, for good reasons, you know, it goes on the back burner, you know, probably even at home, but certainly in a kind of public way. But then it's, you know, you have to argue with your kids. You have to, you know, try and mollify them when they're screaming. You have to walk around with, you know, vomit on your shirt. In fact, you know, one of the roots of this novel was a strange event that happened to me when my daughter was very young, and I used to carry her around in a backpack, which I really enjoyed. But one night I was out for a walk with her, and this guy was a teenager. Just started taunting me from a doorway. He just would call me, you know, say, "Hey, you look like an idiot," or something like that. And I remember getting, like, you know, oddly enraged and sort of forgetting for a second that I had my daughter on my back. And, you know, I turned and I said, "You know, who are you talking to?" And, you know, we had this sort of odd, heated exchange, which is not something that's common in my life. And at a certain point, he just started laughing. He said, "What are you going to do, fight me with that thing on your back?" You know, that thing on my back being my daughter.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, what's the matter with me? Why am I acting like an angry 16-year-old when I'm, you know, 30 years old and I have a small child on my back? And it was just a moment that really stuck with me. And about 10 years ago, I tried to write a story that was called This Thing on My Back, that was about, you know, somebody kind of very reluctant, well, not, it's not even reluctantly, just somebody finding out that his, you know, adolescent identity was still burning inside of him while he was, you know, a responsible adult with a child to care for.
Tom Parada, speaking with Terry Gross. His novel Little Children has just come out in paperback. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's interview with Tom Parada. His novel Little Children is a satire about marriage and parenthood in the suburbs. It's just come out in paperback.
How old are your children now?
My daughter's 10 and my son is 7.
In the acknowledgments to your new novel, Little Children, you end it by saying, mainly, though, I'd like to thank Nina and Luke for letting me tag along at the playground. So I assume that Nina and Luke are your children, and that you spent
right.
a lot of time taking them to the playground and using that as inadvertent research for your novel. You have a really funny paragraph about what the few men who come to the playground with their children are like, what they look like, and how they behave. I'm going to ask you to read that paragraph for us from Little Children.
Okay. Most of the men who showed up at the playground during the workday were marginal types. Middle-aged trolls with beards and pot bellies, studiously whimsical academics who insisted on going down the slide with their kids, pinch-hitting grandfathers providing emergency daycare, sheepish blue-collar guys who wouldn't meet anyone's eyes, the occasional cooler-than-thou hipster with a flexible schedule.
Were you the occasional cooler-than-thou hipster with a flexible schedule?
I was somewhere between the hipster with a flexible schedule and the studiously whimsical academic. But there was some part of me that was also a sheepish blue-collar guy who wouldn't meet anyone's eyes.
All right. What was it like to be one of the few fathers regularly at the playground with your children?
Some women who were at the playground would deny this, but I was actually, I thought, made to feel somewhat unwelcome. There was just some sense of, you know, what is he doing here? And if you try to strike up a conversation, sometimes there was a little bit of reserve or coolness. But what did happen, and I think is something I tried to use in the novel, was that occasionally there would be a woman who, for some other reason, was not part of, you know, the sort of the core female society of the core mother group of the playground. And occasionally I would get into conversations with these women who, for whatever reasons, were also outsiders. And that's the dynamic, I think, between Todd and Sarah. They both feel somehow excluded from this core maternal clique at the playground. And it creates a kind of instant bond of intimacy between them.
There's a section in which Sarah goes shopping for a bathing suit, and she wants to get a bathing suit that makes her look really attractive, which was difficult. And I think most women agree that buying a good bathing suit is a real challenge, and it's something a lot of women are particularly self-conscious about. What kind of thinking did you do to try to write that scene from a woman's perspective?
I think for men, it's very interesting. You know, the point where you realize how you know nervous and anxious women get about these things. Because of course, for most men, I think the idea of a woman in a bathing suit is you know, kind of a very exciting thing. And the fact is, women are probably much harder on themselves and their bodies than men are at a certain point. So I think that, again, it seems like a pretty pervasive thing. I mean, I read some catalogs, you know, and for instance, if you read, you know, the Land's End catalog, there's a very kind of, you know, the voice of the catalog is, you know, this is coverage, this is going to, you know, save you from certain embarrassing issues that will conceal the problem areas. I mean, it was really just right there in the forefront, and maybe, you know, what I was reading something that men don't normally pay attention to. You know, we're just supposed to look at the pictures. But it was, you know, right out in the front, you know. And I've certainly heard women, you know, talk about the bathing suit dilemma.
Do you want to read that paragraph?
Sure.
In this paragraph, Sarah is shopping with her young daughter, Lucy. And while she's, you know, trying to find a good bathing suit, she also has to keep track of where her daughter is.
That's right. And I should say that Sarah is hoping to go to the town pool and reconnect with Todd after their first intense flirtation. So she's given this a lot of thought. When she finally made her selections, she dragged Lucy into the fitting room and told her to stay put while she tried the suits on over her generously cut gray cotton panties, which kept poking out and spoiling the effect. Not that there was much to spoil. The first suit hugged her hips and waist perfectly, but looked about three sizes too big on top. The second fit nicely across her chest, but drooped off her ass like a tote bag. She thought the third suit looked okay. It was a black one-piece, daringly low-cut, with a series of oval cutouts traveling up the side. But when she left the fitting room to consult with the sales lady in front of the three-way mirror, the woman hesitated for a long time before answering. "I wouldn't," she said finally.
Yeah, I love that. When the sales lady who needs to sell you clothes thinks something looks bad, it really looks bad.
I know. Usually she would.
Thanks for reading that. Did you talk with your wife a lot about certain things, you know, before writing the book or while writing the book, just to get, you know, just again to get into a kind of female point of view of things?
I think when you live with somebody, you get their point of view.
Good point.
Kind of around the clock. I'm sure I had to ask her certain questions, and she'd be very happy to help me if I did. But I think it's more like, a steady stream of information that I get from her and from, you know, other women friends.
You've said that one of your interests is, you know, writing in a period that's obsessed with youth culture. And you started writing when you were in your 20s. You started publishing, I should say, yes, when you were in your 20s?
Actually, 30s? I started writing those stories when I was in my 20s, but they mm-hmm. didn't get published till I was in my early 30s. Bad haircut.
Has it been difficult for you to make that transition out of youth culture as a writer and as a person, to not be like the young person anymore or the young writer?
No, I just practice denial on an extreme level.
I guess I'm wondering, like, what's your approach to, like, getting older in a culture that is so kind of youth-obsessed and so in denial about getting older?
Well, I think, like a lot of people my age, there is that kind of denial. I mean, I know that when my first kid was born, one of the first things I did was get a mountain bike and had some period, you know, where I, you know, I think I take way better care of my body now and spend a lot more time exercising now than I did when I was young. And I was, at least until a couple of years ago, you know, I was the kind of person who, you know, I would still get carded. And, you know, when I'd go take out books from the library at the college where I taught, you know, they'd say, "Oh, you're not a student." But recently I've started to go gray and I don't get that anymore. You know, I'm trying to do it with some combination of, grace and defiance, you know. As for the writing, I mean, I have to say that I'm still a little bit 10 years behind. I mean, I'm in my early 40s, but the characters and little children are in their early 30s. I do think I'm still looking backwards and trying to figure out, you know, what it is that I've gone through. And that seems okay for a writer. To look backwards in that sense.
Well, Tom Perotta, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Terry. I enjoyed it.
Tom Perotta's new novel is called Little Children. It's just come out in paperback.